Hello, America, and to our friends around the world. Welcome to the Common Sense Show. We are the show, freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And we're going to try to keep you free economically. We asked Guy Gottschalk to come on. He's the CEO of My Digital Money. And that's Bitcoin, XRP, and the whole thing with crypto. But stablecoins. Oh, my. I'll tell you, I'm a little nervous about this. I know Lynette Zhang is having a tirade about this. She says it's the end of everything. And so we wanted to turn to the voice of moderation and reason here, Guy Gottschalk. And Guy, the Genius Act, as they're calling it. Very clever names, big, beautiful bill, the Genius Act. Is this genius, or should we be worried about the passage of stable coins? And first of all, let's start with this too. Basically, tell the audience what a stable coin is designed to do. And how Trump expects to use it.
Yeah, a stablecoin, essentially it's a digital currency that is pegged to the US dollar. It could be other fiat currencies too, but the US dollar is dominating in terms of stable coins. So yeah, it's basically designed to not be volatile like Bitcoin and some other cryptocurrencies. So that's where the name stable comes from, right? The value of one stablecoin will be $1. And so it's essentially a way to transact digitally more efficiently, right? Because you have a lot of the same properties as cryptocurrency where you can transact on a public ledger. So there's transparency. You have settlement that's instant. So you can get your money right away. And then you could also build a lot of innovative applications around it where you can, transact. You could put it in your own wallet and do things like that. So it doesn't have to, always go through a bank. Although the initial issuance does happen through a bank-like entity. That is now regulated because of the Genius Act. But
Is
anyway, a
that the Federal
stablecoin.
Reserve that's controlling it?
Well, you could say that they can overreach at some point, depending on law, right? But they are not issuing the stablecoin. That would be a central bank digital currency. That would be direct control, right? But now there's issuers, a lot of large ones, but also they could be small ones that are more regulated now by the government. So just like banks are regulated, you could say that the government can overreach and freeze your account or do something like that, but they're not issuing it directly.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve is not issuing it directly. Then is it the Treasury Department, Congress? Who's in charge?
Well, the Fed and the government basically have oversight over the regulation, but issuers are the ones that are actually creating the stable coins. They're holding reserves because now part of the regulation is you have to, hold US Treasury bonds or cash equivalent. So if you have, a million stable coins that you're issuing, you have to have a million worth of US Treasuries. And the government basically, or an, there's an auditing firm that has to come in and make sure that you're backed. And that's meant to pr protect the consumer, of course. But also there's anti-money laundering standards that the issuers have to meet, right? And basically there's oversight from the federal government. But if you're a smaller issuer, part of the Genius Act says that it could be the state that oversees it. So if it's a big enough issuer, then the federal government oversees it. Otherwise, it's the state.
So there's a limit. If you're below a limit, the state can produce stable coins and put them into circulation. But if it goes over a certain amount, then the federal government takes over the oversight.
Yeah, and it's not the state that's issuing it, just to be clear. It's they would just be overseeing. They would just be
Who
making
issues
sure that
it?
they're
Who
compliant.
issues it? Go, guy. That's what I'm confused
So it
about.
could be any kind of like a bank, or it can be a company. Like, so one of the biggest stable coins is Tether. I don't know if you've heard of USDT. That's the biggest stable coin issuer, and that's a private company, right? And then you have Circle as well, USD. You have PayPal even that issues stable coins, right? So that's an example of an issuer, but that's a big issuer. So they would be regulated by the federal government. if and now you can have smaller issuers that now that it's regulated, you can be sure you're going to have a lot of new issuers coming up, new companies, right, that are going to decide to issue their stablecoin. And if they're small enough, they will be regulated by the state
Okay.
that they're in.
So, they just have to have that backing behind the stablecoin. $1 per stablecoin. That leads me to another question. One of the things I hate, with a capital HATE, hate about the Federal Reserve is fractional reserve banking. If you're a banker guy, not that you would be, and I give you a dollar, you can loan out $9. Are you kidding me? You just inflated my money, okay? And you're costing me money while you're making money. Fractional reserve banking is what they call it. If it's indeed a one-to-one correspondence, does this do away with fractional reserve banking, or will the Federal Reserve preserve that right and we'll have two systems independent of each other?
So it does not necessarily get rid of fractional reserve banking, but it will make it, in my opinion, over the long term, less likely to happen, or it'll happen on a reduced scale, right? Because even though banks are still going to be able to do fractional reserve banking, right? They can issue a stablecoin, and then if you decide to custody your stablecoin with them, they can take a certain interest on it, right? And they can lend it out and do the same things that they're doing now. But because you have stablecoins in a digital form, that opens up a whole slew of applications, right? Now you can have decentralized financial applications where you can use stablecoins to lend out your stablecoin directly to someone else without the bank being in the middle. So now you're going to have alternatives to the fractional bank reserve banking system, right? Where
You can be
you
your
get to
own
keep.
banker.
Yeah, and you know what I would advocate for, and I hope that this happens, is that you can actually like private wallets can custody stablecoins, right? And I think that's part of what has to come with this, right? Is the ability to put stablecoins in your own wallet, and then be able to use decentralized financial applications, outside of the bank with stable coins. And at some point, if you want to redeem, you want to get cash for it, then you have to go through a bank or something like that. But the bottom line here is that it's going to create more competition for banks. And if the banks are going to engage in this fractional reserve banking, they're going to be less likely to get the business, right? There's going to be alternatives out there. But that's part of the core issue with this, Genius Act, right? Is that that's one of the biggest challenges is, how do we prevent government overreach? And I think, there's a lot of ways to mitigate that. And I think there's going to be a lot of work that has to be done to mitigate that. Absolutely. One of them is, we have to put more legislative safeguards for digital rights. So I think we have to amend the Genius Act to make sure we protect digital ownership as a constitutional right. So that's going back to what I just said,
In
the
other words, to
ability.
protect people from being the victim of social credit overreach.
Yeah, so enable, you and I to put stablecoins in our own private wallets. So then they can't just be frozen, right? That's one example. And then, maybe we can require court orders before blacklisting or freezing assets. Limit executive powers for censorship or seizure. There's things we can do from a legislative standpoint. And then from a technical standpoint, we can do a lot, right? We could promote DeFi, decentralized finance rails over traditional integration. So that means that we encourage the use of stablecoins in decentralized protocols instead of just with banks, right? And also, when you do that, you increase the censorship resistance. So we can do more of that, right? We can do put transparency around, around some of the controls like multi-sig wallets and things like that. There's things you can do. But of course, this does have a danger of government overreach. So
Yeah,
it's
let
a
me be
valid concern.
specific. Government overreach. I'm going to get right down to it. I don't like what you're saying, guy, and I'm the government. I'm going to take your stable coin away from you. That's the fear that I would have with a digital currency. And you're saying we need amendments to make sure that doesn't happen. So, in other words, the guardrails aren't there.
Yeah, to make sure that we have, first of all, you're able to hold your stablecoin in your own wallet, so no one can take it from you, right? But then, of course, there's off ramps and on ramps. So if you want to, liquidate and get money for that, you have to, transfer that stable coin into something like a bank or, an issuer. And so if they're really tightly controlled, then yeah, they can, then you might be prevented from cashing out. Right. So we got to make sure that there's enough decentralized alternatives, right? So you can actually transfer your stablecoin to a decentralized application that would maybe, allow you to cash out, and no one can control that decentralized application. So we got to make sure that the government allows for the development of these decentralized applications, and I don't think they can stop it. I think that, the people will demand that, and there's so much benefit. Again, we'll be left behind if we don't allow decentralized applications, right? So I do try to take the optimistic view. I think that, it's going to take time to get there, but I think, there's always a risk of a little bit of overreach, but I think that eventually with technology and the right legislation, we'll mitigate that, and
So, but right now, as it stands, we're not protected from government overreach. It's going to take additional legislative action. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think, but I mean, there is still protections from a technical standpoint, right? Because you will have, wallets that support stable coins and things like that. It's just that, you would have to be careful. You would have to not transfer your stable coin, to the wrong place, right? That might freeze your assets. So there'll be ways around it, around overreach, but yes, there could still be overreach in the short term. But I still see this as a positive development, because it will increase adoption overall for crypto, right? I think more companies will now get into it, and I think, aside from that, it's good for the dollar, right? Just speaking as an American, I think it does help mitigate the de-dollarization that's happening with BRICS, right? I think BRICS just had a conference beginning of this month, and there was barely. The attendance was really lacking there because I think part of it is, Trump, threats with tariffs, right? For people that support BRICS activity. But I think the stablecoin also, I mean, it makes the need for BRICS currency much less. Yeah, I think it helps cement the dollar dominance. So yeah, there's always like a conflict in my mind between, wanting the dollar to be strong, but also wanting less government control, right? Crypto. So I think this is a good way to get to a middle ground, right? Where you get both, but it's not going to be painless.
Do you know anything about implementation, what we're looking at?
You mean in terms of
Bringing it into existence. It's one thing to have legislation, it's another thing to actually be doing it.
Yeah, so we already have stablecoin issuers, right? So now it's there's going to be new issuers that come on board, and I mean, there's probably going to be some pain points in regulating, right? Like a lot of the issuers are probably going to need to do extra work in the beginning to make sure they're compliant. So there'll probably be some pains around that, but I think we're already here in terms of having stablecoins. Now it's going to be a matter of, within like 1 to 2 years, we're already going to see crazy adoption. We're going to see all kinds of applications being more mainstream, like decentralized applications, ways to lend out your stablecoin, transferring money overseas, right, will be much easier. That could happen within a year. I mean, I think it's a relatively quick timeline.
Okay, so you think it's going to be about a year?
Yeah, well, the technology is there, right? Now it's just a matter of, figuring out how to work within this regulatory
Will
framework.
people spend stable coins or dollars? I'm kind of confused about that.
Well, I mean, you can do both, right? So you can basically buy stable coins with your dollar, and then, there'll be applications where you can transact digitally, like even, if you have like a metaverse, or you have, all kinds of new innovative applications that or online, you'll probably use your stable coins there. In a
Yeah.
store, you would probably, have to convert to dollars. But I'm sure that even at stores, they're going to start, more merchants will probably take stable coins at some point, right? It's going to take some time.
What about credit cards? How's that going to factor in?
I'm sure it'll be easier to use because you can already with some merchants spend Bitcoin. So I think stable coins it will be pretty easy
No,
to
I get
ship
that, but
out.
I'm just saying, okay, I pull out my Visa. Is that still going to be a viable instrument to transact with?
Well, I don't know. I think over time as we're going to move to more like crypto credit cards because the merchants have to pay like a big
So it'll be a
fee.
debit card, basically, not a credit card.
Yeah,
Okay.
because the merchants have to pay, a pretty big fee to use Visa.
That's right. That's
So
right.
I think with crypto, now the fees will be less, right? Because the technology basically is there to be able to transact instantly and cheaply. And
So
so
when I
that
order
will.
from Amazon, I'll have to do stablecoin in all likelihood and not use my credit card on file.
Yeah, I mean, unless the, I mean, I don't know. I haven't thought that much about it. The credit cards could adapt and, lower their fees and provide some kind of benefit, right? Like the fact that you can use credit instead of, needing to have the money. I'm sure people will still need credit, right? But I think that Visa and MasterCard is going to have to, change what they're charging. And I'm sure
Oh,
they're still going to be around. It's just that they're going to have a little bit of different, they're going to be operating differently.
mean we won't have to pay 29% interest?
Maybe. Yeah. I think this is all going to be good because we're moving towards a world of efficiency, right?
I'll tell you, it's going to make it hard not to pay your taxes. And I think that's a good thing. And it's going to be harder to money launder.
So depending on who you are, you might say that's a disadvantage or an advantage. But yeah, and generally, I think it's good. I would agree.
El Chapo's family doesn't like this.
No.
They're not going to be able to launder into your local restaurant and
I mean, you're still going to be able to use dollars, right? I think
yeah.
so. Just like you can now, you can use a credit card or you can, use dollars,
Wonder
but.
what you're going to buy drugs with. I mean, illicit drugs. Not that I do that, but I'm just projecting this out now
Sure.
in organized crime because it's a cash and carry business. And so you take stable coins, how are you going to tell the government, well, it was a cocaine deal I did. That's going to be kind of hard to justify.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be harder for drug dealers, so.
Well, I'm still have, I think I have the basic concept, but I think I'm where probably most of my audience is at. It's really hard to get your mind completely around this now because it's so different.
Yeah, it's so different. It takes time, but I think as some of the applications will become mainstream, it'll make more sense because people will be using it. But the thing is, it's not going to look so different than the applications you use now. Like a lot of times, you do transact online, right? Like you'll go and buy something on Amazon, and you'll use like your payment method, and so now you might use this new issuer or like like Circle or whatever. To get your stable coin and you'll just choose a different option, right? And so it'll be, it won't look so different, but you'll know that under the hood, you're passing stable coins from one end to the other instead of, using your bank, right?
Well,
Which
I'm
sometimes takes
hoping.
time, a
Here's
lot
a big
more.
one, guy. Here's a really big one. We're $37 trillion in debt because of irresponsible legislators. Okay. And it's the only reasonable way to put this. It's their fault. Now, having said that, I hope they're not going to build in exceptions for government spending. I'm hoping they're going to have to live by the same rules you and I do. You got a stable coin, you better have a dollar behind it. Is that going to be equally applied? What do you think?
I mean, I think so. I think the law, mandates that, and there'll be transparency around it. I think because it's on the blockchain, so you can see what's going on. So, if they're not held to the same standards, we'll know. And yeah, I think that has to be part of the legislation, right? But yeah, that's what it says, is it says that, everything has to be one-to-one backed up. So I think that applies should apply to everybody. And but I think the good news is that it will create massive demand for U.S. treasuries. So it's good for the U.S., I think, and it's
It'll
going
build the
to.
value of the dollar and
Yeah.
it will technically bring down the value of the debt. Yeah, I
For
agree
sure.
with that. I agree
For
with that.
sure.
I think that's
Yeah.
true. I forgot to take my paranoid medication this morning, Guy. So I got to ask this question.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. As long as the Treasury Department, Congress, shall coin money according to the Constitution, and maybe even a little of the Federal Reserve. Okay. If the involvement with stablecoin stops there, I'm fine. But the minute this goes into the Bank of International Settlements, the Bank of London, and these international globalists, if it's tied into that, I want nothing to do with it. Okay, that's my paranoid question.
Yeah, I think obviously I think that they would be involved too, but I think the key is to diversify across issuers and jurisdictions, right? And so, you don't want to have a single issuer like USDC, Circle, right, or PayPal. So now that we have this framework, you can have a lot of different issuers. It's not the actual Genius Act doesn't say, oh, you can only have two or three. Right, it's giving you a framework to, as a company, to create your own stablecoin, right? And so, I think as long as we have a diversification of issuers, and you can have issuers outside of the U.S. as well, then I think you have options, right?
Oh, wait a minute. Does that mean that foreign governments could move to control our currency value?
No, it's just like, foreign governments can have US dollar as well, right? So they would be creating the stable coin, but they still have to buy dollars, right? They have to buy dollars and hold dollars or US treasuries, just like they
Oh,
do now.
my gosh. So if we have a trade balance over a country, they literally have to use the dollar or stable coins as a reserve currency.
Yeah, it's just
Uh-oh.
the same as now. It's
I
just that
get it.
now.
I get it. I get it. It's why Trump. See, I thought Trump was pushing tariffs for concessions politically and stuff, and I've seen evidence of that. But I think this is also about reestablishing world reserve currency here
That's
in the
what it
United
is. That's
States.
what that's what this is about.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm half sold on that point right there.
Yeah. And then that's what it's meant to do, right? And that's why the tariff threats went alongside this, right? Like if you start supporting BRICS and trying to get away from the dollar as a world reserve currency, we're gonna hit you with higher tariffs, right? And now we're making it much easier to transact with the dollar, right? So this becomes kind of the de facto engine, right? Of the digital world. So I think, there's risk, but it's a good thing overall. And I
What do you
think
think the biggest
Bitcoin.
risk is, Guy, if you were to look at it and say, okay, this is my biggest concern as a citizen, then I'm going to ask you also, what's your biggest concern as someone who works in Bitcoin and crypto? So kind of a two-part question.
Yeah, I think the government overreach would be that, like that, that they would be able to see more of my transactions, right? Because I'm doing everything more digitally now. And yeah, it would just be easier for them to see what's happening and freeze my account. But I'm not so concerned that I don't think it's a good idea. I just think that we should push for legislation and make sure that we innovate on the decentralized side of things. So I'll be a proponent for that as a way to mitigate this. But that would be my main concern, I would say. But I think Bitcoin is still a great thing, right? In terms of protecting your wealth, because the dollar is still could still be devalued. It could still be overprinted. So I think Bitcoin is a limited supply, and so it does still serve as that digital gold, and it will keep us more honest on the stablecoin side of things. Because if the government completely does the wrong thing with stablecoins, people will just flock to Bitcoin, right? And so that's part of why we have the stablecoins too, is because people were going more towards Bitcoin because they didn't have that instant settlement and the transparency and all those things that Bitcoin was giving. You weren't getting, and now you're going to get that. So if we now completely misuse that system, then people will still have that alternative of Bitcoin and other cryptos, right? And so I think Bitcoin serves this really important role to really keep us honest, and also to help build your retirement. I'm always preaching that because that's what we do at My Digital Money, right? We always preach having Bitcoin in an IRA as a way to build wealth, not just protect your wealth. And I think Bitcoin serves that really important purpose. And the Genius Act now makes it even, more important to invest in an IRA because, now this has really become legitimized and mainstream. And so now you have Fidelity getting into it. I think employers will get into it, and I think it's the IRA is now going to become mainstream. So
You know what
it's a
this
good time to
reminds
get
me of
in.
a little bit? When gold has historically been used to counterbalance the loss of value in the dollar, as the dollar dies, gold will rise. The stablecoin situation sounds like it's transferring some of that to Bitcoin as a safety valve.
Yeah, Bitcoin serves the same purpose, right? It's very similar to precious metals in that respect. Only it's more it grows at a faster rate, at least right now. So that's why it's a good time to get into it because it's still early.
What
And
do you
now it's
expect that?
legitimized, so the risk is much lower now, right? Now that we have legislation, this is like the Bretton Woods moment here.
Very good analogy. Let me tell my audience what that means real quickly here, because a lot of people don't learn that in history. Bretton Woods was 1943, and it was clear the Allies were going to eventually win the war. How are we going to rebuild? What's going to be the universal currency to help rebuild? And that's when the dollar was decided it will be the reserve currency. And everyone said, well, nations are going to industrialize. They're going to need oil. So to buy oil, you got to buy the dollar, and there's your backing for the dollar. That's effectively what happened. And I agree with you. This could be a Bretton Woods moment. Here's what I don't mind. If the visibility of stablecoin is such the government can detect clear and present money laundering, okay, illegal activities. I am fine with them freezing assets just like they do now under RICO. But if you say President so and so sucks, whatever, and then they go after you for that, that's where I have a problem.
Right. Yeah, and I think again, I do think that we can mitigate that, but there's always that risk, right? That could happen.
Would you trust Hillary Clinton with this? I mean, that's what I'm really bringing it down to.
I wouldn't trust, any one government. That's why I think it's important that we don't allow executive power overreach on this. And so we need to have the right legislation in place. You need to have court orders and whatnot
Yeah.
to freeze assets and valid reasons. And also again, the technology, we need more decentralized technology. So even if the government does misbehave, a new administration comes in, tries to overreach, at least there's ways around the freezing of this, right? At least you have alternative applications, and issuers even abroad, right? Or you can hold it in a private wallet so no one can reach it, right? You can put it in a cold wallet so you still have your stable coin, and maybe you go and redeem it in a different country, right? Or you wait for the next administration, right? But you
Yeah.
can protect your stable
In
coin in a private wallet.
a perfect world, the guardrails would already be in there. That's in a perfect world. And what I don't know, and I suppose we're going to have to wait to see what greater legal minds than you and I are. I'm not a lawyer. But what would constitute an unconstitutional behavior from seizure of assets? Could you do it based on First Amendment rights? Or would it just simply because of criminal activity where the RICO laws apply? That's where I think this really needs to be clarified. Let me bring this down to your business, okay? Because you're one of the good guys on the Bitcoin side, one of the best. Okay, what is the implementation of stablecoin going to do to the value of Bitcoin, in your opinion?
I think it's going to skyrocket. I think, it increases liquidity in the digital world, which can then be transferred to Bitcoin. And it just it legitimizes, this world of cryptocurrencies, right? It's going to create a lot of innovation, right? And that innovation will basically allow for multiple currencies to be transacted within those new applications, right? Bitcoin and crypto included. And so Bitcoin is still, the number one cryptocurrency, and I think, it's really been skyrocketing since, not since the Genius Act was passed, but since we kind of knew it was going to pass, right? Like we already saw that it passed, the Senate, and it was going to pass the House. Like I think last time we spoke, I even told you probably before the August recess, it's going to pass. So I think the market already started, to price that in, and also, there's been a lot of institutional adoption. Charles Schwab is now providing Bitcoin as an option to their client,
That's
and you
true.
have like this phenomena of like Treasury Reserve strategies. It's like the MicroStrategy strategy, where organizations are keeping Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And what a lot of people are actually doing is they're doing like reverse mergers. You know about this?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
Where basically people like different companies, private companies, are using blank check companies or reverse mergers to go public with their digital asset holdings. So they basically bypass the 6 month plus process of going public. So they basically buy a public company that is not really doing much. It's a shell company. And then now they can issue stock, and they can raise money that way, and then they can buy Bitcoin, and then that sells at a premium, right? So it's about a 200% premium over the net asset value. So then they can, chart, then they can issue more stock at a higher price and then buy more Bitcoin, and then this continues. It's a cycle. And when you look at MicroStrategy, their stock went up 3,000% from 2020 because of this strategy. And so basically the value of the stock goes up at a higher rate than Bitcoin. And a lot of companies are doing this right now. I don't know if it's a good idea during a bear market, right? Just as fast as they go up, maybe they can crash. So I would be careful to invest in these companies. I would still be a proponent of investing in Bitcoin directly, instead of these like, Bitcoin treasury companies. But if you do want to make a quick, buck, just make sure you get out at the right time, right? If you're going to invest in these. But when you look at these companies, we have like hundreds of companies now that are doing this. And now they're starting to do it with Ethereum and other cryptocurrencies as well.
What
So
about
this is
XRP? Are they doing it with that too?
not yet, but I think that will be next. But right now they're doing it with Ethereum and Solana, and a few others. And, the market now is over $4 trillion, and Bitcoin actually just hit a milestone. Even it's 2.5 million around in market cap, but it hit the $1 million in investment milestone. So that means that not a million. Sorry, did I say million? Trillion. So $1 trillion has gone into Bitcoin so far. So that was a big milestone that
Yeah,
we just went through, but.
that's huge. That's absolutely phenomenally huge. Can Bitcoin stay independent of stablecoin abuse?
Yeah, I think Bitcoin is independent. Can be really controlled, as I've said in the past. So yeah, I think it's independent, and I think it'll keep us honest on the stablecoin side, or help at least. But there's going to be a challenge, like just like with any new technology, right? There's going to be a period of time where we have to iron out the kinks, and we'll get through it.
Have they announced implementation dates that are firm? Have you seen anything?
I think there's a bunch of private companies that are now like doing things, but I haven't seen anything. This just happened Friday, so I'll definitely keep you posted for the next time. I'll have a list of, implementation developments. I'm sure companies are gonna be coming in left and right, with new issuances of stable coins and new applications, and they're gonna be coming out of the woodwork. So,
Well, I think this is inevitable, and I think it's incumbent upon all of us. How are we best going to survive and thrive in this new environment? Sorry, I forgot to take my paranoid medication, but this is a big departure from past economic practice. I think there's some positives in this, though. Excuse me, and I want to congratulate you for being so well informed, because I came at you with a barrage of questions today that I know my audience is going to wonder about, and I think they've walked away, but I think regardless of where this goes initially, and I think it's going to take off quickly, Bitcoin is really a place to be. Would you still highly recommend XRP too?
Yeah, I think XRP is good in that even though it's not as decentralized as Bitcoin, it is used by the big banks, and it's kind of like used within traditional finance. So if you're what we call Bitcoin maxi, you would be against XRP, and I understand that, right? Because you're kind of subscribed to the whole Satoshi philosophy of let's prevent a 2008 crash, and let's have a completely decentralized currency that's outside of government control. So you're probably not going to be for XRP. But at the same time, if you want to be pragmatic, right, it takes time to get to an ideal world. So I think XRP starts to provide a lot of the ethos of crypto, but it's still within the traditional finance. So it's more likely to take off, right? Because you have big banks that are adopting it. So you're not fighting against the big banks, you're working with them. And there's a lot going on there on the technical partnership side, and it's taken off, right? So XRP, it just hit an all-time high. It went up about 70% in the past month or so, or even in the past 2 weeks. So yeah, it's definitely up there. It's something that you should diversify with, in my opinion. I'm not just for having one currency, so I think it's a good way to diversify. But Bitcoin, if you want to be conservative and you're just starting, is always a good option. And I think the crypto IRA is a conservative way to start, because you're not paying taxes, right? Like you can basically trade, swing trade, sell when we get to an all-time high, which I think we're probably, going to hit in the fourth quarter of this year. Then you sell at that point, then maybe during the next cycle, you kind of like buy back in when we're again at a low, and you can keep doing that without paying taxes for a while, right? So,
Unless you're 73, I've learned that now. If you're 73, you got to begin to take out a distribution and pay tax on it.
right.
Yeah, but for people who are
But with
not.
a traditional IRA, with the Roth IRA, you don't have to pay taxes because you're putting post-tax money in it.
That's right.
But yeah, things change when you're in retirement age, for sure.
Yeah,
But
but for people who aren't in retirement age, I mean, it sounds like the IRA is a real good deal. What about people who are creeping up there in age and they go, well, I may not be 73 yet, but I'm going to be there pretty soon. What would you tell them to do?
I mean, if you could still contribute to an IRA, and have it like a Roth IRA and then be able to, have tax-free gains, I would do it. And a lot of times, people have IRAs already that they can transfer in, and they don't need the money, right? Like a lot of times they have already their cash flow, from their normal jobs or, properties or whatever it is. And the IRA is kind of just like extra for when they retire. So, for me, I had an IRA sitting there. I forgot about it, a 401k from an old employer. So to me, it was much easier to start that way rather than taking money I depend on, right? I was able to just transfer
Yeah,
over
that's
to
a
a
good
crypto
point.
IRA, and I was able to see it grow. And then, wow, I gained confidence. I was like, wow, I just doubled within a year. That's crazy. Okay, let me do this with cash now because I feel confident. So that was a good way for me to start. That's really how I started.
That's yeah, a lot of people wish they could do that. With regard to if people say, okay, IRA's nice, but I want to do something directly with crypto or Bitcoin, what's hot right now? What would you tell them to do?
Well, you can do the same thing with cash on our platform, so you don't need an IRA. If you're, it depends on your risk tolerance and your financial goals, so it's always different depending on who I'm talking to. But Bitcoin is a good thing to start with. It's more conservative, in that it's less volatile than a lot of the other ones. Now, if you want a really high return, then you got to get more into altcoins, right? Because even though Bitcoin is still early on, it's not going to be what the same returns. I just read an article that someone just cashed out $9.5 billion. In 2014, they bought in at 50,000.
Wow.
They bought $50,000 worth of Bitcoin, and now they sold it for 9.5 billion. That kind of return is not going to be there anymore with Bitcoin, right? But you will get, that 200, 300%, over a few years, which is really good. It's still better than most other asset classes. But if you want a really high return now, Then you can start looking at the what we call altcoins, which is every crypto other than Bitcoin. So XRP is great. Solana is great. Ethereum is still really good. It's the second biggest cryptocurrency. And then you have a lot of other ones like Chainlink, and I would do research on these. Like, they all have their own utility. So it really depends, like, what you think, what resonates with you, right? Like, Chainlink is basically about providing real world data to smart contracts. That's probably gonna lose a lot of your listeners, so we would have to.
No, I hear you, but you got people there that'll explain this to them if they call.
Absolutely, yes. That's one of the kind of advantages with us too,
Another
is
question I have is you hold this in cold storage for people, don't you?
yes, so the security is absolutely there. So we're our platform is more for retirement. So it's not really for day trading, right? Like, you can't buy Bitcoin and then sell it like a half hour later. You have to wait till the next day. And that's because we have cold storage. So in order to day trade, you would need to keep your crypto in a hot wallet, which means it's online and it's more susceptible to hacks. You can have security in place and everything, but it's not going to be bulletproof when you have a hot wallet. But with a cold wallet, you're offline, right? And so that's how we store people's crypto. And we're able to do that because, we're not offering day trading. But you can swing trade. You can buy crypto today and then turn it around tomorrow, but you can't do it
That's a
within
pretty
an
quick
hour.
turnaround, because you
Yeah.
get into a range. Let's say that you went from just round numbers here, let's say 110,000 and it jumped to 120,000 over a week, and you come in towards the end of that week, you could cash out a certain amount, couldn't you?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah,
But if you're a day trader,
that's good
that's really,
access.
yeah, if you're a day trader that's within the same day making a bunch of trades, that's not going to be the platform for you. This is more
I
for.
don't think of crypto that way, though. I think of the stock market that way, but I don't think of crypto that way.
Well, some people do it. I mean, because the volatility allows you to gain a lot with, day trading, right? But you have to really, like, look at technical indicators, and that's not like the common person is not day trading, right? They're not making a living out of, like, it's more swing, what I call swing trading, which is, every few days or every week or every month. So our platform is good for that, and it's more for building long-term wealth. Like, we believe in holding on, over longer periods of time, because we still think this is going to skyrocket, right? Every cycle you go up at least 5 times, and
Yeah, and you don't need to be a day trader to take advantage of these great increases that are coming. You can just say, okay, this is time for me to take something out here. It'll be interesting, though, down the road, are you going to be paying it out in stable coin or dollars? So that I think that's still probably up in the air somewhat and undefined. Tell people how they can get a hold of you because it sounds like your people really will be on top of explaining all these things.
Yeah, so it's mydigitalmoney.com. You can find our number there. But if you want the number, it's 833-636-2008. But the number's on the website, and you can always open an account, online, mydigitalmoney.com. And we have US-based people that, you can talk to if you have any questions about signing up, or, about cryptocurrency in general. We can help you get started. We started this, for the common person that may not be comfortable with cryptocurrency. So, that's why we
Okay.
have a US-based customer service, which, is hard to find, usually, but we're here to answer your questions.
I think it's terrific. This has been one of our, I think, most impactful interviews because we're covering something so novel, but blending it into how people can jump in and take advantage right away. Our guest here has been Guy Gottschalk of My Digital Money, and you go to mydigitalmoney.com, and you can also call at 833-636 when the economy fell out, 2008. Okay. So
You
that's the
got
number
it.
you can call. I like how you chose that number, though. I've referenced that before when I've
Yeah.
talked about your company. Well, Guy, really interesting stuff. I appreciate you handling. You handled the barrage of questions I gave you really, really well.
I would say so, considering I'm a tech guy, not a, I'm not a legal guy, not a lawyer or anything, but so
But
it's
you understand the
interesting.
trends. That's the
Yeah.
thing. You understand the trends. You understand the laws. There's no hint of any FTX ever with your company. Thank goodness. So
Absolutely.
I would
Yeah.
encourage people, if you're going to do business in this, want to look into it, this is a really good place to start. MyDigitalMoney.com. Guy, thanks for joining us, my friend. Good stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Take care.
You too.
Hello, America, and to our friends around the world. Welcome to the Common Sense Show. This is the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. My name is Dave Hodges. I'm the host. Happy to be with you. Make sure you sign up for our newsletter. Go to thecommonsenseshow.com. Click on the newsletter link in the upper right-hand corner. Put in your email. No, we don't sell your data. And you'll get an update of everything that we do in the previous 24 hours. Because we do multiple reports. People like the one-stop shopping. Over 50,000 people are taking advantage of it. And best of all, it's free. So go to the website, sign up today. Well, we have a story here that I really kind of happened upon. I've been researching the AutoPen scandal, and I'm gravely concerned, but I'm not done with my data. I think there are some unsubstantiated allegations out there, and I think there are some substantiated allegations out there, and I'm trying to separate them by proof, and we're going to be doing something on that in a later segment on another day this week, probably sooner rather than later. But in the course of investigating, I found some things that were really, really disturbing. Really disturbing. And I got to tell you, if anyone would ever think about electing anyone who identifies with the Biden administration, just go out and be quicker if you just took your money and set it on fire. I'll just leave you with that. And we're going to break it down. What did I find? And in particular, with the infrastructure bill. Not only was there fraud, there's an extreme violations of the Fourth Amendment. We'll explain it right here. Hey, we're brought to you by My Digital Money. What is that? That's XRP, that's crypto, that's Bitcoin, and it's run by my good friend Guy Gottschalk, who's the CEO, and I'm interviewing him in just a few hours. And I got to tell you, this Trevor trove of information. This guy is on top of things like you wouldn't believe, but he runs a very reputable company. And if you believe Bitcoin, XRP, and so you think they're the wave of the future, this is where you want to be. This is the best company, but the opportunity is there. In the last year, Bitcoin's gone from about 60,000 to 111,000. It's on its way to 300,000. Some experts say in a few years it's going to be a million. This is the time to jump on right now. Go to mydigitalmoney.com. That's mydigitalmoney.com, or you can call 833-MDM-2008. That's 833-MDM-2008. Well, I'm referencing Biden's infrastructure fraud. Excuse me, Bill. It is fraud. You can say, well, how can I say that? I'm going to give you one statistic right here. Out of many, but I'm not going to bog down on all these fraudulent, phony baloney headline features of the bill that never came to fruition. The Biden administration funded 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. Do you want to know how many they actually built? They built eight. Eight. And this was over $1 trillion of our tax money. The infrastructure bill did not build infrastructure, but I'll tell you what it did do. In the quiet mainstream media, unpublicized parts of the bill, they're robbing you of your constitutional rights. You're saying, Dave, you sound like the Dave of old who is having his property stolen. Well, you're not just going to have your property stolen, you're having your rights taken along with it. This is a huge cut into the Constitution. I'm going to be very specific. Section 13002 has to do with a National Motor Vehicle Mileage Pilot Program. Pilot means how do we organize it for maximum efficiency and profit? But it's going to happen. And Congress is just fine with this because this Congress could have undone this, and they have not. So that tells me they're fine with the fraud associated with this bill, as well as the usurpation of your constitutional rights. National vehicle mileage tax. Now, why do they have to do that? Well, the federal government charges you 18.4 cents per gallon in federal tax for every gallon of gas that you get. But with the proliferation of electric vehicles, they're not collecting that tax. So now, They got to go after everybody, and they want to impose a vehicle mileage tax. I told you this was coming 5 years ago. The insurance companies love it, and this will be a direct line to the insurance companies who will build differential rates for people with the same driving record, the same automobile, but they're going to charge them because they're driving more miles, so they'll pay increased payments on their insurance. Yeah, thank you, federal government, for assisting the insurance companies. But it gets worse than that. Now they want to have third parties on board to spy on you. I couldn't make this up. And again, this is in section 13002. You can look it up for yourself. They want onboard cameras. They're mandating this now in the new cars, and they want to look for the 3Ds. They want to be able to monitor drunk driving. I have mixed feelings on that. I don't want drunk drivers on the road. But is this a violation of the Fourth Amendment? Well, we could argue that at a different time. There's a morality cause there, and there's also a constitutional issue. But let's get down to what else they're looking at. Distracted drivers. But see, in the legislation, they don't define what distraction is. It's so broad that the enforcement could be onerous. Do you take one hand off the wheel to scratch your ear? Is that a distracted driver? We don't know because they don't define it in statute. I think it's pretty clear that if you're texting while your car is in motion, you are a distracted driver and you are a danger, and I am fine with that. But again, it's unwarranted surveillance of you, which violates the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. Again, I have mixed feelings. If they just said texting, okay, I would have to look at it closely. But I would give it careful consideration. The way the law is written, I mean, this is a total violation of your search and seizure, surveillance, privacy rights. And then they want to have a measure of drowsiness. Man, oh man, I'll tell you, I am very familiar with circadian rhythms with an extensive background in the field of psychology. I can cite to you backwards and frontwards the stages of sleep. The characteristics of each stage, pre-drowsiness, drowsiness. I mean, I know it all. And I will tell you this, to measure this in a third-party measure is going to be nearly impossible. But yet they've written this into section 13002. So they want to make driving more expensive. They're going to tax you based on the miles you drive. Your insurance company is going to charge you higher premiums on that basis. And then you have to have onboard camera that'll be a federal offense to disable, and it's going to spy on you in these three areas. And the areas they're measuring are undefined, general, and broad, which means it can be abused. They can go beyond what we'd consider to be reasonable and go into the onerous. I tell you what keeps popping in my head. Communist Chinese Party and social credit. I can't get that out of my mind when I look at this data. This is horrific and it needs to be overturned by this Congress. And remember the old saying, all that evil needs to triumph is for good men to do nothing. So if this Congress does nothing about this, at least tighten up the regulations, make it clear and definitive how you're going to be held accountable and what you're going to be held accountable for, because that's not there now. There's too much latitude that can be applied, shall we say, preferentially and individually. I'm Dave Hodges. This is the Common Sense Show.